Chapter 8. Hank arrived at Jolie's house about 5 minutes early. She asked him in with a lazy smile on her face. Hank held the smooth fabric of her summer robe when they kissed. She seemed scented with a fine, lingering odor he'd never smelled before. Jolie drew back and told him she had to get dressed. Just before turning to go, she opened the robe. Hank didn't have time to focus on the flash and cursed his glasses and the bad vision that necessitated them. The room was even more distastefully shabby in the daylight. The rug was covered with a deluge of discolorations that told the same piggish story of life with Tony that Jolie's pictures did. He inclined his head to the side on the room she disappeared into, but heard nothing. He allowed himself another triumphant gaze around the room and was staring intently at the doorway when he heard her cheerfully call his name. At first, he couldn't speak, but eventually mustered what he thought sounded like a nonchalant yes. Jolie didn't reply, and Hank went searching for her. He found her bent over a box at the foot of the bed, partially covered by a cloud of sheer pastel material. He stepped into the doorway and said, "Yes again? Would you come here and help me with this?" She bent lower into the box and began waving her ass back and forth in the air, slow and deliberate. Hank stared, wanted to squeeze and rub her ass. He found himself moving forward, one hand on the frame of his glasses to steady himself. When he reached her, he ran his palms up the back of her thighs and squeezed her cheeks. A moan echoed from the box, and his cock went so hard he wanted to pull it out of his pants. Hank submerged himself in the picture she presented to him. Her ass was firm, and he loved the promising line of the crevice between her cheeks. Now Jolie slipped a hand back through her legs and sought out his cock, jolting him. He hadn't expected her to touch him there, and now he was pushing his pelvis toward her. She traced his zipper with her fingernail. Then she squeezed the whole front of his pants and began jerking him up and down. Hank hardened. She gave it a squeeze and then let go. When she straightened and turned around, he came back towards her. She smiled one of her liquid, slow smiles and flexed her fingers on his chest. "I have to get dressed," she giggled, and walked into the bathroom, leaving Hank staring at the open box and Tony's unmade bed. A wince crept into his face. He forced his eyes to roam the room. Their wedding picture stood on an unkempt dresser. Hank glared at the drunken leer on Tony's face. Hank hadn't cared if she was married, but the story she told him about it being a fake marriage sent prickly sensations over his skin, like an allergic reaction. Had she lied to him? Jolie stepped out of the bathroom in blue jeans and a bra. She walked to the dresser and casually stood between Hank and the picture and inhaled so he could see the rise of her chest. She noticed his face was crumpled and that his eyes weren't following her. There was a stiffness in the awkward way he held his head, and the bulge in his pants had collapsed. She turned back to the dresser and stared at the picture with him. She tilted her head to meet his eyes and smiled. "That's a fake. We rented those costumes for a picture that we could show people who asked." She stood close to him and rubbed her nylon-covered nipples on his chest. A hand he hadn't told to do anything reached up and spread and squeezed her nylon cup and then fell back to his side. She started to put on her shirt while he retreated to the front room, looking for a magazine or record jacket, something to read so that he could focus. They left, and quickly Hank walked to the car. He didn't feel the stare of the neighbor's eyes, but he knew they were there. As the car turned off her street, he asked if she wanted to take a ride to the shore. In the sunlight, it was easier to see the plumage of freckles that covered her face and made an extraordinary contrast to her white blonde hair. She watched him with ever-present smile that she had these days. Now she turned to face him, and she reached into his pocket for the toll money that he needed. During the drive, Hank tried to watch her. His head bobbed between them like a flicking switch. Ron took a swallow of coffee and viewed the total of his book bill with despairing astonishment. The figures ascended in front of his eyes like huge stone columns, which he dreamed of picking up and flinging into outer space. He had one more class to go, and the figure was already more than $80. How could he have forgotten to compute books into the cost of going to school? He pictured himself a complete fool, incapable of advancing beyond the stage of toilet training. The strangeness of the image stopped him until he remembered the phrase was something he heard in his first psychology class that he picked up the phrase from his professor. He took out a fresh pack and wondered which side you were supposed to tamp when you tamped both ends and opened the pack. He put the cigarette into his mouth backwards and looked to see if anyone was watching him. Maybe he wasn't as bad as it looked. He didn't have to buy all the books at once, and many of the teachers didn't quite seem ready to start giving assignments, except for Lashley. There had been a mix-up in orders at the bookstore. Some editions hadn't arrived yet. Ron pictured his psychology professor dusting off a pant leg as he gave the class that information. For a moment, he considered the possibility of chucking the whole idea and driving back to IBM in the morning. He could tell them that going to college had been a great error and that maybe he could have his old job back. He thought about the cork-lined, windowless room in which he'd worked for the last 2 years. He swallowed hard on another gulp of coffee and heard a voice saying over him, "Would you like to be part of the best frat on campus?" Ron looked up. A hand extended a sheet of paper in his direction. Behind it, a curly-headed kid in a gray sweatshirt with the letters GIA spread across the chest. "What?" "My name is Phil Freibush," said the guy. Philip, a business major with a goal to go into sales, sat down in the chair next to Ron. "Do you know what a service frat is?" "No," Ron said, flat. "We provide community services and donate our time to worthy causes, but mostly we just party." He added the last part with a salesman grin that Ron had seen many times before. "Each semester, we make rounds and choose those people we think we could get along well with in our kind of organization. We keep out the niggers and the freaks without hurting anybody's feelings." "I don't think I'm the fraternity type," said Ron, in the "I want to go back to what I'm doing" voice that he used on Jehovah's Witnesses. Philip took Ron's lack of interest as an opportunity to practice his difficult customer routine. "You know, pledging with us isn't half as bad as what some frats put you through. We have a sister sorority right here on campus." Ron watched him, hoping that his obvious lack of interest would get rid of the guy. "Did I mention that one of our brothers owns a Jaguar, and that we have a shore house that is ours all year long?" Ron continued to stare at him. "By the way, what's your name?"
"Ron Tuck."
"Well, Ron, we currently have about 20 active student members and about 35 more dues-paying alumni. But that's not all. You'd be connected to frats all over the Northeast that are part of our organization. I don't have the time or money, said Ron in his official IBM voice. And besides, I don't think I'm interested anyway. Philip Rook punctured, and with smooth, collegiate smile disappeared, the boy frowned. He began to scan the room for another prospect. Ron swallowed down the rest of his coffee and stood up. The lyrics to the Beatles' Baby, You're a Rich Man pounded out of the speakers and echoed in his ears after he was out in the hallway. The last class of the day was math. He stepped in front of the door and looked in. He saw an old man with white hair sitting drowsily at his desk while three students in their chairs sat watching him. He couldn't bring himself to go in. Spinning on his heel, picking up speed, Ron headed for the parking lot. He left the radio off in the Olds because he had forgotten to adjust it back down yesterday, and George brought it up this morning. Images from the day went through his mind like a number of transparencies he was trying to align. They slid across each other's surfaces like glaciers. A GTO whooshed past him with the blare of its radio. Ron saw the driver's blonde hair and stared at the rear end of the car. He flipped on his radio and scanned his mirrors for an opening. When he found it, he jumped into the right lane and began making tracks. After that, he tailgated the station wagon, then cut off the Buick to his left, then beeped at the Buick and made his move. The woman in the car stomped hard on her brake and threw her arms out to protect the slumbering cat next to her. And, oh my God, escaped her lips, and she trembled. Meanwhile, Ron hummed along with Surf City and passed the cars easily now. George always did buy cars with plenty of pickup. He had a clear view of the pale blue GTO now. He approached a toll plaza that would help him catch up. And he knew how to make the most of it. There were 12 booths to choose from, and they were fed by only 3 lanes. The trick was to keep your speed and be ready to bank to the left or right. All you had to do was pick your slot and not stop. He was able to slide in back of the GTO. A naked-to-the-elbow arm flipped a coin, and Ron noticed a bounce in the girl's hair as she pulled away. Gliding through the plaza, he flipped the coin without stopping. The green light blinked when the Olds was halfway through. The timing was good. The Olds was almost alongside of her now, and Ron goosed the pedal to pull up even. She drove with both hands on the steering wheel. Ron was able to scope her before she noticed him. She looked like a heavy-set dog, and he punched the pedal again, so as not to prolong contact. The strawberry alarm clock called on incense and peppermints, and he settled into the middle lane and continued home. Jolie's legs were spread like a two-pronged fork. Instead of the jackrabbit Hank usually pictured himself as, he was now batting out a springy tattoo of a bedroom jackhammer. Without his glasses, he saw her as a blur, but he could feel her all over his body. It was blind ecstasy. Until she shoved her finger up his ass. Hank thought he was going to swallow his tongue from the shock, but told himself that he didn't care as long as he was allowed to continually fuck this amazingly fuckable woman. She scraped her nails along the inside of his ass, and Hank was sure that he'd started to bleed. He didn't care. He was going to run like an engine, no matter what. Jolie clamped her legs around him and beat her heels on his spine. She twitched involuntarily. Then her eyes opened like someone who was coming out of a coma. Hank felt his hips moving with the urgency of a water pump. He felt droplets of sweat trickling from his armpits. He wanted to make noise when his orgasm sent him bucking into her, buried his mouth on her shoulder, and made muffled moans. She brought her palm to the back of his head and stroked him there until the spasms subsided. He looked up. Her skin glowed with a pink and white luminosity that seemed to wash away the lines of years and men.